This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Canada is moving towards legalizing gay marriage. Will the U.S. follow suit? Tomorrow we'll talk about the similarities and differences between the two countries and how those differences are manifested in people's attitude towards many social issues. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Now, the history of a term. Yesterday, in a speech at Virginia Community College, President Bush used the phrase revisionist history.
We made it clear to the dictator of Iraq that he must disarm. We asked other nations to join us in seeing to it that he would disarm, and he chose not to do so, so we disarmed him. And I know there's a lot of revisionist history now going on, but one thing is certain, he is no longer a threat to the free world, and the people of Iraq are free.
Joining us now is Peter Novick, a professor of history at the University of Chicago. He's with us from his home in Chicago, and good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here.
From the context of the president's remarks, clearly he was using revisionist history as a pejorative term. When did this phrase first come into popular usage?
Well, so far as I can tell, and I think I've got it right, it first comes into use with respect to the origins of the First World War. The Versailles Treaty that ended the First World War had as one of its provisions that Germany was solely responsible for the war, and as a result, it was only right that Germany pay for the costs of the war, and that was the underpinning of reparations. Well, there came to be among historians and others a lot of discussion about whether this really was a fair appraisal of how the First World War had come about. And so there was a connection between revising the historical version of the origins of the war and revising the Treaty of Versailles, and in particular the provisions having to do with reparations. From then, it came to be used later on in other contexts in which a traditional version of events, particularly diplomatic events, came to be challenged. There was a little bit of World War II revisionism on the part of Republican isolationists who said it was Roosevelt who led the United States into war. There were so-called Cold War revisionists who in the early 60s started to question the notion that the Cold War was exclusively the responsibility of the Soviet Union. And then came the usage which really made the term so very loaded, those malicious or deluded fruitcakes who denied that the Holocaust took place described themselves as Holocaust revisionists, that is to say, historians who were simply in a scholarly fashion revising the traditional version. And, of course, everybody was appalled by this, quite rightly, and the term revisionist came to be connected with these Holocaust deniers, and I think there's not the slightest doubt that when Bush used the term, he was trying to use all that pejorative connection that the term has acquired because of the Holocaust deniers.
Let's get a caller. Sean is on the line with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, what exactly is revisionist history? It depends on the why of history. And it's a current term for a continuation of a centuries-long debate. The Greeks argued about the first two parts of this, if you wish, definition, about whether history is supposed to teach facts or lessons, or more recently, in the past few centuries, foster and define a sense of national pride. When you switch from one or the other, or change the focus, for example, on what lessons you teach, like what he was just using as an example, you've revised history. A good example is George Washington. The British looked at him for a very long time as an insurrectionist and traitor. Our national histories, of course, look at him rightfully as a founding father and great man. And Native Americans, if I can remember the phrase correctly, called him the great white father who burns. When, as president of this country, he deliberately engaged in a campaign of ethnic cleansing, genocide light, which means he killed literally thousands of women and children. All are correct on a factual basis, which is my bias. But I challenge you to find a history book that portrays him as all three. As writers choose, depending on bias, commercial requirements to get published, or changing social and values and focus, you've got revisionist history.
Well, Sean, thanks very much. Professor Novick, isn't all history, in a sense, revisionist?
One of the things that's very striking is that For professional historians, the fact that historians revise previous accounts is taken for granted. That's how we make a living. I was just surfing the web to, in advance of this program, trying to get some sense of different ways in which the term revisionist gets used, and I came across a book review by a friend of mine at Princeton saying in great praise of a new book that this is a revisionist look at American consumption in the post-war years. So to historians, it just doesn't have the same flavor that it does to people who use it polemically in the public arena.
Well, from your point of view, and of course that's subject to revision, but from your point of view, did the president use the term correctly yesterday?
Oh, no, it was grotesquely inappropriate, and indeed it was kind of defensive, because what was happening, and I also, again, sort of was surfing through NexusLexis to find this, As you no doubt know, in the last few weeks, there have been a number of people who are saying, hey now, about these weapons of mass destruction, which we were told were all over the place. Where are they? And what you've had is the Bush administration, in a very tendentious way, revising history and claiming, well, it wasn't really weapons of mass destruction that we were concerned about. We just happened to mention that. It was other things. So this is... If revisionism in this pejorative sense means the tendentious and polemical rewriting of history for political purposes, that's what they're doing.
Well, Peter Novick, thanks very much.
Okay.
Peter Novick is a professor of history at the University of Chicago, and he joined us from his home in Chicago, Illinois.